It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon and welcome to the broadcast. I'm Bill Price. Election fiasco.
I just think it's an embarrassment.
There will be a smooth transition to a second Trump administration.
That is our top story at noon. More than a week after the election, and President Trump has yet to concede. Florida Senator Marco Rubio says half the country does not trust last week's vote.
At the core of our Republicans, legitimacy comes from people's confidence in the elections. And right now, you've got half this country that has doubts about the veracity of this election.
Today, President Trump held his first public appearance since the election. He attended a Veterans Day ceremony at Arlington National Cemetery. His Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, says the administration is ready for a fight.
We're ready. The world is watching what's taking place here. We're going to count all the votes.
Speaking from his hometown of Wilmington, Delaware last night, Joe Biden says he's taking steps to take over with or without President Trump's help.
How can I say this tactfully? I think it will not help the president's legacy.
Media critic Joe Concha says even if Joe Biden prevails and wins the White House, his power will be greatly diminished.
You're now looking at the closest division in the House since 1958, a scenario where you could have a GOP House in 2022, a GOP Senate, and then a Democratic president, and a revolt as a result of progressives in the left wing of the party who will absolutely be furious that none of their agenda items are getting through.
A new political poll, meantime, shows 70% of Republicans do not think Joe Biden won a free and fair election last week. James Freeman at the Wall Street Journal blames the mainstream media for that.
We are going to have an inauguration of a president, and we shouldn't sweat it. But it would really be nice to see a less partisan media in this era.
CNN aired a segment yesterday that showed a list of Republican names scrolling down the screen. They were lawmakers who haven't called Joe Biden yet to congratulate him. Again, James Freeman.
If they are beginning the what looks to be the Biden era with essentially an effort to shame Republicans in the Hill, on the Hill, that sounds more like something you would expect from the Democrat National Committee than an independent press corps.
Joe Biden, meantime, meeting with his advisors this afternoon as he prepares for life at the White House. Republicans now have 50 seats in the U.S. Senate with wins by incumbents Tom Tillis in North Carolina and Dan Sullivan in Alaska. If Joe Biden wins the White House, though, the GOP will have to win one more seat to control the upper chamber. It'll all come down to Georgia's runoff vote in January as to who controls the U.S. Senate next year. Now to COVID, the U.S. topping 130,000 new cases yesterday. That's a record. And Texas has become the first state to top 1 million cases. Dr. Anthony Fauci says Pfizer's vaccine should be available for COVID patients starting next month.
By the time we get into December, we'll be able to have doses available for people who are judged to be at the highest priority.
Dr. Fauci says the average American will be able to get vaccinated come April. The U.S. military will be in charge of distributing the vaccine. Correspondent David Martin is at the Pentagon.
The Pfizer plant in Michigan is now the leading edge of the crash program to inoculate America. Its vaccine stored in 350 ultra-cold freezers waiting for FDA approval. Army General Gus Perna, in charge of delivering the vaccine, has been counting on Pfizer to be the first and the most difficult to distribute because it requires two shots.
Second dose has to be targeted to the people that already received the first dose. It's essential to our success.
That is David Martin reporting. In Newark, New Jersey, the COVID infection rate is a whopping 19%. That's more than double the statewide average. Governor Phil Murphy.
You got a lot of people letting their hair down in private settings. And particularly with Thanksgiving and holidays behind it coming up, that's the big one for me. We got to plead with people to push back on the fatigue.
Murphy says the infection rate in the Garden State is the highest it's been since last April. In Wisconsin, Governor Tony Evers is urging folks to stay home.
It's not safe to go out. please cancel the happy hours, the dinner parties, the sleepovers, the play dates at your home.
Mask mandates going up in Iowa today, too, where Governor Kim Reynolds says the infection rate has spiked to dangerous levels.
We've reached a point of serious community spread, and we can no longer pinpoint any one age group or type of activity that's driving it.
Officials say most COVID cases can be traced back to restaurants, gyms, and hotels. It's Veterans Day in the U.S. and in Britain. They're marking the end of the war to end all wars. Here's correspondent Vicky Barker.
As Big Ben struck 11, British dignitaries gathered inside Westminster Abbey, British veterans at London's War Memorial, and millions of fellow citizens across the land fell silent, marking the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month in 1918 that the guns of World War I were finally stilled.
That is Vicky Barker reporting. Still to come this Wednesday, the Rumble Ponies staying in Binghamton, the Minnesota Twins leaving Rochester, and how to fight those winter blues.
Well, good afternoon to all. Changes are in the air. The front bringing showers today ushers in cooler air in the days ahead. Forecast details are coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
Okay, Kevin Williams checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania. Wednesday, November 11th, Veterans Day. Republican state lawmakers in Pennsylvania now calling for hearings and an audit of the 2020 presidential election.
We don't know that we haven't seen evidence yet, right? Because nothing's gone to trial or nothing's, and that's what I'm saying. So we have seen a lot of things that are suspicious. We've had a lot of people calling in about how their ballot was cast or wasn't cast or access they did or did not have.
A lot of questions in the Keystone State about this election, that's for sure. Republicans now demanding that an audit of the vote takes place before the election results are certified.
I'm not concerned with necessarily who won or who lost. What I'm concerned with is that people no longer have faith in the process.
It's not going to do anything. It's not going to change anything. You know, you can audit a ham sandwich.
Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman says Republicans cannot change this election just because they don't like the results.
They can sue or investigate or whatever, but I'm just waiting for evidence because right now all I see is baseless lawsuits and ridiculous claims. And
the Trump administration says nearly 700,000 ballots that were cast in Philadelphia should be thrown out because they were counted in secret. Schools in upstate New York in the yellow zone of Governor Cuomo's COVID-19 microcluster response strategy are now getting ready to test students and staff for the virus.
This is a community issue. So this is a community spread issue, and the schools and the districts basically are now shouldering basically all the pain from being put in that yellow zone.
Greece, New York school superintendent Kathleen Gropman says COVID tests will not be given without parental consent, but districts are required to test 20% of students weekly in order to hold in-person classes.
A new 20% each week. So if we get to a point where so many people haven't provided consent, and we don't have new children or kids, students, to test, it could force us into having to go to a remote setting because we can't comply with that requirement.
The logistics of the weekly COVID test still being worked out. Earlier this week, Governor Andrew Cuomo designated parts of Erie, Monroe, and Onondaga counties as COVID hotspots. The Niagara County, New York Sheriff's Office says three young girls were hit by a car. Happened last night on Rapids Road in the town of Lockport. Two of the girls are in stable condition this afternoon at Oshai Children's Hospital in Buffalo. The third in critical condition. The girls ranged in age from 9 to 14 years old. Police say the driver of the vehicle is cooperating with authorities and stayed on the scene last night until help arrived. Governor Cuomo says there's absolutely no truth to the rumor he's interested in being attorney general in a Joe Biden administration.
Zero, nada, niente, zilch. How many? What else do you need me to say?
The governor says he is committed to seeing New York through the COVID crisis.
I'm not going to go to Washington. I have no agenda. I just want to do this job. So we still have a long way to go on COVID, and then we have to get on to rebuilding this state and this nation, and that's more than a full-time job.
Cuomo served as Attorney General of New York from 2007 to 2010. He was the U.S. Secretary of Housing and Urban development under President Bill Clinton. The Rumble Ponies staying put in Binghamton. Steve Cohen, the new owner of the New York Mets.
We're going to be in Syracuse. We're going to be in Binghamton. We're going to be in St. Lucie, and we'll be in Brooklyn.
Rumble Ponies owner John Hughes.
Oh, I'm ecstatic, right? I mean, it really means all the hard work has paid off. Everybody's efforts have not gone unnoticed, and I think it means that the Mets want to take upstate New York.
Just a year ago, the Rumble Ponies were in jeopardy of leaving Binghamton. The team is the AA affiliate of the New York Mets. The Minnesota Twins are ending their 18-year relationship with the Rochester Red Wings. The Wings have been the home of the Twins' top prospects for nearly two decades now. Minnesota is moving their AAA affiliate to nearby St. Paul. The Red Wings now await word from Major League Baseball as to which team will call Rochester, New York home. It is Veterans Day, and did you know that every day in this country, 17 veterans commit suicide? That sobering statistic shows the struggles our war heroes have when it comes to adjusting to civilian life.
I think that by having conversations like this, letting people know what resources are available in the community, that's doing our part to help reduce the number.
Dominica Potenza works at the Vet Center in Binghamton.
Whether it's related to readjustment, whether it's related to suicidal ideation, we are here to help support them in any way that we can.
The Binghamton Vet Center provides individual as well as family services to 180 veterans in an 8-county area. Well, 'tis the season for seasonal affective disorder, and the experts say the winter blues are especially bad this year in the era of COVID-19.
People are not having the same ability to really enjoy their lives in the same way.
Behavioral health consultant Jessica Massaro says one way to beat the winter blues is to get outside. Catherine Thrasher is a mental health program director at Cornell University.
There are documented, well-documented, both physical and mental health benefits to spending time in nature.
Thrasher says all you need is 15 minutes in the great outdoors to greatly improve those winter blues. What's in a name? Well, quite a lot in a name if that name is Lake Effect and if that place is Buffalo, New York. Two businesses in the Queen City that bear the name Lake Effect have butted heads for several years, but now the legal fight is over with.
Both sides and their stipulations said game over. We're done.
Attorney Mike Taheri says the Lake Effect Diner sued the Lake Effect Ice Cream Store just a mile away in Buffalo for trademark infringement. The diner claimed the ice cream shop was confusing customers with their name.
There's no claim anybody didn't have a good product here, which is very nice. They're both good businesses. It's a good place. They're both good.
Reporter Luke Moretti with WIVB Television.
In the world of weather, the words lake effect conjure up visions of heavy snow around these parts. But in the case of these two businesses, the words lake effect led to a legal storm.
And that storm was brewing for a lot of years. Terms of the settlement have not been disclosed, but as far as we know, we can tell you that both the diner and the ice cream shop get to keep the title Lake Effect. This year's Rockefeller Center Christmas tree is a 75-foot-tall Norway spruce from Oneonta, New York. It gets cut down tomorrow for a 3-hour trip to New York City, a tree lighting ceremony set to go on December 2nd. The Bulls get a big win last night. It is sunny time. Your 2-minute drill.
Yeah, Bill, let's start with college football, and the Mac is back in Buffalo.
Jared Patterson gets into the end zone. Touchdown, Buffalo.
Jared Patterson started the scoring. Buffalo continued to pile on, crushing Miami of Ohio 42-10. Kent State big over Bowling Green 62-24, and Ohio knocked off Akron 24-10. Baseball news. New Mets team owner Steve Cohen says it's a dream come true to run the franchise he's rooted for since he was a kid.
I went to my first Mets game with my dad at the old Polo Grounds.
Years later, my friends and I used to sit in the upper deck at Shea Stadium. That makes today a dream come true.
Cohen grew up in Great Neck and says his entire family are Mets fans, including his wife, Alex, who will also run the team's charitable foundation. During a Zoom call organized by the team, newly hired team president Sandy Alderson indicated highly likely manager Luis Rojas will be back next season. Cohen vows he'll run a first-class organization and the goal, win the World Series.
I want an exceptional team. I want a team that's built to be great every year. I don't just want to get into the playoffs. I want to win a championship.
More baseball news. Major League Baseball managers of the year are out. A clean sweep for the state of Florida. Miami's Don Mattingly won the National League Manager of the Year. Tampa Bay's Kevin Cash took home the American League Manager of the Year. Mattingly guided the Marlins back to the playoffs for the first time since 2003. Cash helped lead the Rays to the World Series. NFL news. The owners are approving a playoff expansion contingency plan. The league has approved the proposal to expand the playoff field from 14 to 16 teams. The change will only take place if meaningful games are canceled due to COVID-19 and the NFL is seeing a jump in COVID-19 cases. The league and the NFL Players Association announced there were 56 positive tests for the week of November 1st through the 7th. 15 positives were players, 41 team personnel. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphier.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Wednesday edition of the Noon Report, the president's full court legal press. COVID cases hit a record high and a first at the Ironman Triathlon.
Everybody loves cool animal videos, but what we see when we see animal behavior depends a lot on what we're looking for. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Crows are pretty clever creatures. That's part of the reason they figure so prominently in mythology and playing roles like messengers or tricksters. Crows are smart as far as animals go. Their problem-solving abilities are impressive as long as the problem that's being tackled has to do with food, which is the key factor in that whole as far as animals go part. A recent study of the basic sensory awareness of crows is a case in point. Researchers, while measuring brain activity in crows as they were performing a visual task, came across activity they believed to display, quote, another layer of awareness. What they found was essentially unexpected neuron activity. What they concluded, however, was that these two layers of perception constitute a form of what humans call subjective experience, or in other words, consciousness. After speculating about the possible consciousness of crows, the researchers then shifted from science to philosophy. Humans, they wrote, have tended to believe that we're the only species to possess certain traits, behaviors, abilities, especially with regard to cognition. Occasionally, we extend such traits to primates or other mammals, species with which we share fundamental brain similarities. Over time, the authors conclude, more and more of these supposed pillars of human exceptionalism have fallen. Now, to say that that phrase, supposed pillars of human exceptionalism, is quite loaded. What it's loaded with, of course, is a worldview, one which motivates both this research and these researchers to scientifically justify knocking Homo sapiens off its pedestal. Despite the incredible amount of research that's been done into human consciousness, it still remains a mystery to scientists and to us. And if we're not even certain about how best to understand or define human consciousness, how can we possibly know whether or not what crows or other animals possess should be thought of as consciousness, much less that their consciousness is comparable to ours? You see, what's at work here are worldview assumptions. Scientists who assume that human exceptionalism is nothing more than a religious hang-up will see any animal spotted resembling human behavior as evidence that there's nothing exceptional about humans. A classic example is the mirror test. An animal such as a chimp or a dolphin, a cat, or maybe even a fish seems to recognize itself in a mirror, and that's taken as proof of self-awareness. The problem is, as evolutionary biologist Alex Jordan put it, honestly, the test stinks. No one knows what's going on when animals stare at their reflection. Calling it self-awareness is, as Jordan put it, a stretch. Nevertheless, scientists continue exploring animal behavior and cognition and make their determinations of what they are seeing not from a commitment to science or animal welfare, but from their materialistic worldview. The view that best corresponds to reality as we know it is the biblical view, described by the audacious proclamation of Psalm 8 that humans were created a little lower than God and crowned with glory and honor, and the audacious job description that's described in Genesis, that humans have dominion over all creation, including the birds of the air, even crows. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stonestreet.
20 minutes past the hour. Well, our winning streak weather-wise has come to an end. Let's get to it. Weatherman Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. On the weather map, a cool front is crossing the area today. It's a big change in our weather. It will bring a change from warmth, record warmth, to seasonal chill. And, of course, it's also producing the showers we've seen today. Here's our forecast for the afternoon. Continued cloudy with showers across parts of central New York, the Finger Lakes, central and eastern parts of Pennsylvania. Farther west, overcast skies breaking for peak of the sun. Far western New York and northwest Pennsylvania. Temperatures are pretty much peak for the day. Most areas will be generally in the 60s and dropping. Then tonight, much chillier than recent nights. Showers ending in central New York and the eastern Finger Lakes and eastern Pennsylvania. Otherwise, it'll be partly cloudy. Some fog will form, low temps 40s. Tomorrow and Friday, some sun but cool with high temperatures mostly in the 50s.
All right, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. If you're just joining us, here are some of the stories we're working on you for today, this Wednesday, November 11th, Veterans Day. Full steam ahead for President Trump as he continues to challenge the results of last week's election. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
There will be a smooth transition to a second Trump administration. All right, we're ready. The world is watching what's taking place here. We're going to count all the votes.
Pompeo walking back those remarks last night, saying there will be a smooth transition of power regardless of who ends up winning the White House.
We will make sure that whoever is in office on noon on January 20th has all the tools readily available so that we don't skip a beat with the capacity to keep Americans safe.
Joe Biden, meantime, says he is not waiting for the president to concede. He is moving ahead with the transition. Biden describes the president's behavior like this.
I just think it's an embarrassment, quite frankly. I think it will not help the president's legacy.
A new Politico poll, meantime, shows 70% of Republicans do not think Joe Biden won a free and a fair election last week.
I think that there are partisans on both sides who really struggle to come to grips with political outcomes and electoral outcomes that they don't like, so they don't want to view them as legitimate and will jump through all sorts of emotional hoops to try to come to some other type of conclusion.
Guy Benson at townhall.com.
That being said, I'm in favor of chasing down these leads, looking into irregularities. I think what the Attorney General is doing, I understand why it's rankled some Democrats, but I think for them to look at serious allegations that may have evidence just to restore some confidence among some people, I think that's appropriate. Let's get to the truth. Let's count every legal vote.
President Trump making his first public appearance since the election earlier today. He attended a Veterans Day ceremony at Arlington National Cemetery. Coronavirus cases in the U.S. top 130,000. That is a record. And Texas has become the first state in the country to hit a million cases.
Things are now about the worst they've ever been. The projections are that we'll have 400,000 Americans who will lose their lives by the time about the week after the inauguration. So this is awful.
Dr. Peter Hota at Baylor University says the next few months will be crucial in the fight against COVID-19.
And I'm really concerned that the country's in a bad state this time, and it's happening during a lame duck period.
A number of states are starting to lock down again, right ahead of the busy holiday travel season. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers.
If you have to leave your home, limit it to essential needs or errands. Please only leave your home if it's absolutely necessary.
Nurses in Philadelphia say they simply can't keep up with the influx of patients.
We are the heart and soul of the hospital.
Staffing is the number one issue. Nurses are stretched so thin.
2,500 nurses in Philadelphia now planning to go on strike in nearby Newark, New Jersey. The COVID infection rate has hit a whopping 19%. Coronavirus cases increasing in nursing homes across the country. That report today from the American Healthcare Association and National Center for Assisted Living. The report found the largest increase in nursing home cases has been in the Midwest. We are coming up on 25 minutes past the hour, Wednesday afternoon. You're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
Welcome back to another edition of Real Answers with Christopher Anderson. Wednesdays during the Noon Report, we tackle the tough topics facing today's families with licensed mental health counselor Christopher Anderson. And we had a guest on the show here recently. Catch us up on who you had a chance to talk to.
Well, Brandon, I had the opportunity to sit down with Chuck Holton. Chuck is a former Army Ranger. And he currently works as a foreign correspondent for the Christian Broadcasting Network. So I had an opportunity to sit down with Chuck recently and talk a little about some issues that are very important to us as Christians here in the United States, particularly during times of crisis and during times of, like what we're going through right now with COVID and the lockdowns, and just what that has looked like for the church, how churches are handling it, and then what considerations that we need to take. So here's a bit of my sit-down conversation with Chuck Holton.
How has the church been able to handle this, and how are they handling it from what you've seen? And especially because we know we get a mix of people that are all for following the recommendations and others that are saying, no, we got to get our churches open. What are the responses that you've seen in your travels to how the churches are handling it?
What I have seen, and I've dealt with churches on the West Coast, California, Oregon, Washington, and Nevada. And then I've also dealt with our church in West Virginia. And then I guess you could also talk about what I've seen with the church in Panama. Starting in Panama, the government there locked everything down and no church services. We haven't had church services in person for 6 months. And they had the most restrictive lockdowns of any country in the Western Hemisphere. So in Panama, if you even went outside your house for about 4 months, except for 1 hour a week to go grocery shopping, they would arrest you. So there were no in-person services. We did our best as a church to meet online, but we weren't meeting online. We were watching online, and that's a big difference. The church is not about consumption. The church is about service. And I wouldn't say it's damaged the Church of Christ, but it definitely has been a difficult time for the church because we didn't really know how to handle this at the beginning. And so we scrambled to get our services online. But very shortly, I think we realized that just having the pastor preach to an empty room doesn't do much for him and it doesn't do much for us, because church is about so much more than going and sitting and listening to a guy preach. It's about the interaction and the relationships and the service and the greeting each other with a holy kiss and the laying on of the hands to heal the sick. And it's about touching people and being around other people that is the meat of what we get out of going to church. And I think in realizing that, moving on to like Nevada, the governor of Nevada and the governor of California, they've both been very hypocritical when it comes to applying safety protocols for COVID. So, for example, in Nevada, the governor has allowed the casinos to reopen at 50% capacity, but he's allowed churches only to have a maximum of 50 people, no matter what their capacity was. So if you've got a church of 2,000 people, you're literally only allowed to have services for 50 people, and they wanted you to wear masks the whole time and all that social distancing and everything like that. So what I've seen is that churches have said, now is the time to stand up and to not be stupid. We're going to try to safeguard our people as much as we can, but this is our chance to show the world that our hope is in the Lord. Our safety is in the Word. We're rendering unto God what is God's. And if Caesar tells us we can't do that, then we have to go against Caesar. So what I've seen is a lot of low-key civil disobedience happening out west. And I think it's fairly safe because, I mean, really, what sheriff's deputy or police officer is going to come arrest a bunch of elderly grandmothers who are meeting together at church on Sunday? So the church has not intentionally tried to flout the regulations, but when the regulations are applied unevenly and unfairly, they've said, no, look, we're going to take reasonable measures, but we are going to meet in person and we are going to worship God the way that we see fit. We're adults here and we're going to act like adults. We're not going to act like people who need to be babysat. But for the most part, we're just trying to go on about our lives. And I think we've realized that this virus, while it is dangerous in some sense, it's not Ebola. For most people, it's fine. And if you're in that group of people that it's not fine, then there are lots of measures you can take on your own to mitigate those risks and not have to sort of lock down the whole rest of the country for that.
You've been listening to another edition of Real Answers with Christopher Anderson. It airs Wednesdays during the noon report, where we tackle the tough topics facing today's families with Christian counselor Christopher Anderson.
Thank you, guys. Great show. Real Answers, as Brandon just said, comes your way Wednesdays during the noon report. You can also find it online anytime at fln.org/podcast.
Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. On the weather map, a cool front is crossing the area today. It's a big change in our weather. It will bring a change from warmth, record warmth, to seasonal chill. And, of course, it's also producing the showers we've seen today. Here's our forecast for the afternoon. Continued cloudy with showers across parts of central New York, the Finger Lakes, central and eastern parts of Pennsylvania. Farther west, overcast skies breaking for a peak of the sun. Far western New York and northwest Pennsylvania. Temperatures are pretty much peak for the day. Most areas will be generally in the 60s and dropping. Then tonight, much chillier than recent nights. Showers ending in central New York and the eastern Finger Lakes and eastern Pennsylvania. Otherwise, it'll be partly cloudy. Some fog will form, low temps 40s. Tomorrow and Friday, some sun but cool with high temperatures mostly in the 50s.
Okay, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. Finally at noon, a first at the grueling Ironman competition. Here's correspondent Peter King.
21-year-old Chris Nikich of Maitland, Florida, has become the first person with Down syndrome to complete the triathlon.
Ironman, you know, is unforgiving. There are no special divisions. They don't give you more time because you have Down syndrome, and you have to finish it in 17 hours.
Chris did, despite some setbacks, and for his father, Nick, it was a lesson about Chris's ability to rely on himself.
I saw him do something that showed me that he can do anything.
Yes, he can. Thank you, Peter. Peter King reporting, and that is the world we live in this Wednesday. As always, thanks for joining us. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.